Welcome to the NLP View with your host, Donna Blinston. Each week, Donna will explore how the techniques of NLP can help improve your personal and professional life. And now, here's your host, Donna Blinston.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the NLP View radio show. My name is Donna Blinston. On today's show, I am joined by Helen Oakwater, a certified trainer of NLP, life coach, and published author, who has held a number of hats within the adoption world, including a member of the Government Task Force and a trustee of the National Charity. Today, we will discuss NLP in adoption and trauma, focusing a lot around Helen's book, which is titled Bubble Wrap Children, How Social Networking is Transforming the Force of the 21st Century Adoption. Helen discusses the challenges of being a parent of an adopted child, explaining how the psychological models can be practically used to support both parents and child during the adoption process and the family's life thereafter. As a parent of adopted children, Helen has taken several steps back and looked objectively at the electronic age we live in and how that impacts on our children. Neuro-linguistic programming, NLP, is a study of subjective experience, often referred to as an attitude and methodology that focuses the individuals to question what they actually want, getting people to look at how they could achieve what they want and how other people have achieved that same thing. The huge benefit of NLP is its ability to get people thinking about how they will know they've got it, whatever it is. For tangible results, this is often obvious, but when people are lost, confused, unhappy, or lacking in something, they will often chase the wrong things, throw energy away on something they think they want without addressing the why they want it and for the purpose that they want it. So I'd like to welcome to the show Helen Oakwater. Hello, Helen.
Hi, Donna. Absolutely lovely to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
You're more than welcome. It is an honour to have you today as a guest on my show. The work that you've done, that you're doing, is very, very powerful, and I can only speculate on the vast amount of people's lives that you'll have completely transformed. So it's a huge, big hat off from me and a lot of respect.
Thank you. Well, I think we both do that. We both drop pebbles in a pond and we don't quite know how far they go out. You don't know what your radio show does, and to some extent I'm the same. I don't know what mine does. So I think we're both doing good job. Good job.
Thank you. I'll agree. I'll definitely agree. Before we go any further, Helen, would you tell our audience a bit about yourself and your background?
I have a varied background. I've done, before I adopted three children back in the early 90s, I was a teacher. I also worked in the city. I did some political campaigning. So a fairly varied background. And then adopted a sibling group who were 5, 4, and 2 in the early 90s and became a full-time stay-at-home mum. And in the last 21 years, I have learnt a massive amount about the impact of maltreatment and neglect on children. And in an effort to understand my children and be a better parent for them, I have explored many avenues, some of which were dead ends and others of which were rich pastures, including NLP. I came to NLP in 2002, and by that point, I'd done some intensive therapy, attachment therapy with my children, with the best in the country, who are an organization called Family Futures. And we'd done 2 years of therapeutic input with them, and they are pioneers in their field, and that was useful and effective. And then I did my NLP practitioner, and on the first day the logical levels model came up, and it was like being hit by a train, because it just demonstrated how beliefs drive behavior. And it made me realize how with one of my children, we'd not been able to get through to the and change the beliefs, whereas with two others, we had. And it was a real aha. And that model is the thing that is almost the core of everything I do, because you step back and you think, well, where is this happening? Is this about a belief? Is this about a capacity? Is this a behavior? Is this the environment we're in? Or, wow, are we working at an identity level here? Where is this resonating for that person? So that lovely hierarchical model, that Robert Diltz's model on logical levels, I think is so powerful. I love it to bits.
I love it myself. I really, really do. It has... as a tool, from a coach perspective, it has opened doors that I might not have looked at, to be honest with you, without having that at the forefront of my mind. Just by paying attention to their language, I've thought, the way I thought I was going to go isn't going to be the best way for the client.
Absolutely. And I often, when I'm, because I work as a coach, as you say, you know, executive and personal coach. And when I'm working with clients, I will often draw the logical level model out, and so that the client can actually see how changing at an identity and belief level is actually going to have a massive impact. And that certainly from a coaching perspective is where I focus my work, you know, and I think the trauma stuff links into that, because that the shrapnels from trauma go in at an identity and beyond identity level, and, you know, are stored in the body. So that's all linked together. So I think it's one of many wonderful models of NLP.
It certainly is, and for our audience, the model is basically, it's a triangle, where you have the base of the triangle is your environment.
The where and when.
Whatever problem may arise, whether that be a problem that they're aware of or that are not aware of. And then your next layer is your behaviour.
Yeah. What's visible, you know, what can you actually see?
What you can see in that person, what they're doing, and also what they are doing that they might not have been aware that they were doing. So it's beneficial for both the client to identify with, but also the person who's observing them. And then above our behaviours, the next layer up, we've got our capabilities and our skills.
Which is the how-tos, isn't it?
Above our capabilities and our skills, we have our beliefs and values. So what we believe in ourselves, in general, our beliefs in different things, and then also what's important to us.
Yeah, and that, which is the why of the who, what, why, when, where, how. So the why, yeah.
And then above that, we've got our identity, which is the point, in effect, of the pyramid, of the triangle.
And that's the who.
And then shining, in effect, all the way out of that and surrounding it is our mission and our purpose. Which is that what else, who else, and why else are we doing something? So it's that bigger picture of us as a person.
Mm. Our mission and our purpose, absolutely, which you're on yours and I think I'm on mine.
Yes. Definitely, mm. Definitely.
And it is, I mean, it is, it's lovely to kind of shared and explored that, because it's just such a glorious model.
It is.
To make sense of what appears to be nonsensical behaviour.
It is. And I'll just to help the audience, I'll give a little example in a business sense.
Mm-hmm.
If you have got somebody who needs to do PowerPoint presentations for their job role, and they aren't very good at it, or they're nervous, they're scared, they don't want to do it, you can send them out on 1,001 presentation skills training courses, which is level 3. On our model. But if they don't believe that they are able to do it, or don't have that belief in themselves, or from a values point of view, it's not important to them to do it, then that is wasted.
Absolutely.
So that's to give the audience an idea of where we're listening. So when we're listening out for the how, who, when, where, and what, when we're picking up on that, if we can see that what we were going to work on was environmentally or behaviourally or at skills level, and what their language they're using is identity level, then whatever we had got planned would be useless, because it wouldn't be hitting the right area.
Absolutely. I actually have a real life example of a chap who's probably 30 or so that sent to me, and at real fear of delivering presentations, but was being promoted and it was required. And we we explored what that was about, and actually it related back to his early childhood. He had an alcoholic father, so he learned a belief at the age of, I don't know, 3 or 4, that staying quiet keeps you safe. And he then picked up that belief, which was very useful at the age of 3, and then carried it with him as he got older. And as he got older, and certainly by the time he'd got to 30, that belief was now limiting him. Mm-hmm. And so to transform that belief into something like sometimes keeping quiet keeps you safe, and at other times having your voice heard will empower you, or something slightly, but he'd come up with something better. And I think that's very true for business and in all sorts of things. And also very true in the work around that I'm doing in the adoption and fostering world, because children who've lived with maltreatment, neglect, and go on to be fostered or adopted, or people who just live with parents who are not able to look after the child's needs because they have their own problems, they can create children who have got these limiting beliefs and this sense of hopelessness, helplessness, worthlessness that then goes on throughout their lives. And I believe that the earlier we can intervene with these kids and help them reframe and transform those beliefs is absolutely essential. I think that's really, really important.
You're setting the child up for a different life by being able to address it.
Absolutely.
At an earlier stage.
Absolutely. And it's one of the you know, one of the questions that sort of underlying all of this is, how do I use NLP in what I do? And one of the things is actually timelines, and actually stepping away from a timeline and saying, well, what's the likely trajectory for this child if we don't have an intervention? What's the likely trajectory for this child if we don't fill in the gaps from their past? What's likely to happen to this child if we don't dissolve some of the trauma that they experienced in their early childhood? Because as we know, trauma affects the brain, and if you've got children who've been traumatized, who spend a lot of time in their base old brain, their reptilian brain, they're not able to use the thinking part of their brain. And so they're going to be reactive, and they might be angry and defensive and fearful, which might make them fight. So they're going to be on a behavior level, look really angry and don't come near me. And I, you know, And actually inside, the beliefs that they have might be around, you hit somebody before they hit you. The world is a dangerous place. People hurt you. So they build up a behavior around those core beliefs. And that's why changing those beliefs at a deep level is the role of, I would say, good coaching, good therapeutic intervention, therapeutic reparenting. And that is transformational for a child.
It is completely transformational. And it's also transformational for the whole family, because it just transforms the whole family's life, doesn't it?
Absolutely, because I think one of the things that's very difficult for many adoptive and foster parents is they have a very angry child that's living with them. And sometimes it's, even though you know they might have had difficulties before they came to you and whatever, sometimes when it's your purse they've stolen or it's your precious thing that they've broken, it can feel very, very personal. And it can feel as if they're really having a go at you. Children's behavior is their vocabulary, and it's the role of the adults around them to look at them and say, what is really going on at a deeper level here? So not looking at the surface behavior, but looking at what's going on at a much, much deeper level.
Yeah.
And the other thing that NLP can, I think, help do is for the parents to manage their own state and that whole state management. Because it is tough living with children who are angry or lying or stealing or running away or various other behaviours that are deeply, deeply challenging. And the world also looks at these children and doesn't understand why they're doing what they're doing. And because these kids need therapeutic reparenting, and by that I mean the therapeutic bit is undoing the damage, and the reparenting is filling in the gaps. So it might be that actually they didn't have their needs as a 12-month-old baby met, which means that actually what you do need to do with them is hold them and cuddle them and snuggle them and do that eye-to-eye contact that you would do with a baby. And you might need to do that when they're 5 or 7 or 9 or 12 or 15 or 18 or 21. And fill in those gaps, because those developmental gaps have a dramatic effect. So being a therapeutic parent is challenging, and you have to see things from a different perspective. And the world doesn't perceive you that way. The world just thinks, that's very strange. That child has just done something horrible, you know, it's broken something. And your response is to give it a hug, which seems odd. So to give an example, if you had a 2 or 3 year old and they stood in front of you and you say, oh, I see you've had a biscuit, and they go, no, 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 and they've got cookie crumbs around their face and their mouth is full, and they go, no, I know. As a parent, you'd laugh and say, oh, yes, you did. And because that's what you expect from a 2 or 3 year old. If they do that behavior when they're 14, it seems, why are you lying to me? How can you do this crazy lying? We use that phrase, crazy lying. Why are you doing this crazy lying? You've got cookies all over your face. Your mouth is full. The biscuit tin's empty. Actually, it's the 2 or 3 year old that's giving that response. So from inside that child, inside that 14-year-old, the 2 or 3 year old, with the unmet needs of the 2, 3 year old, is responding, not a 14-year-old who's lying.
Yes.
And one of the complexities for adoptive and foster parents is that they've got different needs at different ages all going on at the same time. So sometimes you think, I've got to do all this as if they're a 2-year-old. Are they being a 7-year-old now? Are they being a 14-year-old? So it's very conscious parenting the whole time, which is challenging.
Yeah, it is challenging, and it's, I think for the parent, it's not only learning all that they need to become aware of in order to do the reparenting, but also how to deal with the rest of the world, because I think it's a perception that other people place on the parent as well as on the child that the parent carries.
Absolutely.
So it's ways of resourcing them so that they can cope, and having that is back to caring for the carers, isn't it?
Yes.
And what else we can do to help them, because they're doing an amazing job. That their amazing job started the day they adopted. So it's how can we make their amazing job even easier for them?
Yes, I would agree. And I think one of the ways of doing that is for as many people as possible to understand that neglect and maltreatment on children has there's a legacy that comes with it. And that legacy of trauma has to be dealt with. And it has a very long tail. And just because a child's been in placement for 5 or 10 months/years, doesn't mean they've forgotten everything that's happened to them. And again, it comes back to what beliefs they've formed. And yes, I think it's very hard for the world to understand that, which is part of my reason for writing Bubble Wrap Children. I've been writing articles in the adoption and fostering world for a number of years to do precisely that, to try and help adopters and foster carers and resource them in certain ways to help them understand, and then also give that information out. And I know that the articles that I've written get photocopied and given to teachers or therapists or various other people as a way of explaining what's going on. Because I think one of the problems for adopters is that if an adopter goes in and talks to a teacher and says, you know, actually, my child's got, you know, these needs because of what happened to them before they were placed with me, actually, a lot of the time they're going to be that's going to be interpreted as, God, they're a really over anxious parent. Just like, you know, and I've got a number of those, not understanding the deep trauma that goes on behind. And I actually had precisely that episode. On one evening, as part of the big lobbying that was going on for the adoption bill back in the early 2002, I think, and presented to a very big audience in the Palace of Westminster. And there are all these lords and members of parliament and various other people, and they're listening in complete silence to what I'm saying, and it's great. And I do my standard thing of holding up the bubble wrap as the metaphor for saying these kids, their strategy to protect themselves is to wrap themselves in bubble wrap. That protects them from what they're experiencing. But they leave it on because it's a good protection. But it stops them seeing the world clearly. It distorts their view of the world and it distorts our view of them. So I'm standing up on this platform doing that. Following day, went into school to talk about one of my children to the teacher. And the response from the teacher was, well, I do understand all this. You know, I have a number of children in my class whose parents are divorced. I understand all this. And I just stood there with, and I did that gaping fish thing.
Yeah, and, I'm doing it now.
And my mouth is going up and down, and I'm thinking, oh, we're just on such different pages. And that teacher would not have listened to me because I was just the over-anxious parent, whereas the previous night, a large audience had listened and honoured what I'd said. So sometimes it's who is the messenger, who gives the message, as well as what the message is, which is, I think, why having articles written and books published that people can, adopters, foster carers, can give to other people, maybe members of the family, to help them understand the children that are living with them and understand why these kids are often very different and really do need parenting in what seems to be a counterintuitive way.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more, Helen. Would you explain around the kind of language that we can use, both as the parent or the teacher, the VK language, and how that, what kind of an impact that would have for the child?
That's a really good question. I think, like all communications, and one of the things with NLP is recognizing what the other person's patterns are and whether they have a tendency to be a bit more visual or auditory or kinesthetic. But I think it's in a way it's bigger than that, that for many teachers or parents, going visual, and this is the work of Michael Grinder, not John Grinder, but his brother, Michael Grinder, on going visual and the whole group dynamics and the micromanagement of nonverbal communication is incredibly powerful. The noticing what's going on, so with the VAK, but also listening to the underlying things about the, you know, well, I should do that, I must do that, I could do that. I think that's one of the things that's quite useful. But I think for many teachers, actually doing that several steps back and saying, I may need to do something completely counterintuitive with this child. So it might be that the child, for example, has a code word to say, I'm about to lose it. I'm feeling really uncomfortable in this class right now. Mm-hmm. I need to leave the room. And if they've got a code word and they say, I've got to go and get a banana, or I've got to go and see the head teacher or whatever, or roses, and they get up and walk out of the class, the teacher knows that they're not walking out of the class in a defiant way. They're walking out of the class because they are about to lose it and explode. And so to avoid that mega aggressive, angry potential confrontation, the child and the teacher have agreed that the child can exit because that's the right thing to do for that child at that moment. So it's pre-framing. And I think pre-framing and reframing are, again, are enormously powerful in this context.
Well, Helen, I can't believe our time has gone so quick. You're going to have to come back and join me. There is so much more we need to talk about. I want to thank you, really thank you for joining me today. And could you share your contact details with our audience and how they can buy your book and your website?
Absolutely. You can contact me at the Helen Oakwater website or the Bubble Wrapped Children website. The book is called Bubble Wrapped Children. You can get it on Amazon. You can download it on your iPad, in your Kindle, and all sorts of other techniques. And from the Bubble Wrap Children website, you can actually download, I think it's 3 or 4 chapters of the book completely for free. Chapter 0, which is kind of an overview, looking at what happens to before a child is placed for adoption, which looks at perceptual positions and some of the sensory experiencing. And also it also includes what I call the big picture and how we have to change in the future and the recommendations. I think it might be the introduction and a bit of pre-frame. I don't know, there's quite a lot there as a freebie, actually. But it is, but I just think it is so important that that message gets out there. But you can buy the book on Amazon. And also, it's very conversationally written. That's part of the feedback that I've got. And it has quite a lot of diagrams, and it is selling purely by word of mouth, and it's selling quite well. I'm delighted to say. And also on the website, there's quite a lot of articles that I've written relating, you know, and a variety of things. So you know, people could sort of sit down and spend quite a long time reading through. And just copy, you know. And my request is that if you use any of the material, please honour the source, as I always do.
Fantastic. Well, Helen, thank you ever so much. It's been wonderful having you today on my show. As I say, you're gonna have to come back.
Donna, I would be delighted. Thank you so much for having me.
You're more than welcome. And a big thank you to all of our audience for tuning in today. If you'd like to learn more about NLP, then tune in each week and also visit my website, www.donnablunston.com, where you'll be able to pick up a copy of my best-selling book, Psychobabble, a straightforward, plain English guide to the benefits of NLP. Also visit theorganicview.com and sign up for our newsletter, which will keep you updated with the up-and-coming shows, guests and online workshops. You'll also be able to connect with us on Facebook at /TheNLPView and via Twitter at the NLP View. Look forward to speaking to you next week. Thank you. Bye-bye.